Well, do you ever wonder if there are angels around you, who they are, what they look like? Well, Doreen Virtue has some answers. She's done it with Saved by an Angel, incredible accounts by people who have had extraordinary experiences with angels later on in the program, because this is a special night that always seems to get incredible phone calls. We'll take your calls to share some of those angelic stories with us as well. Back in a moment with Doreen Virtue on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Doreen Virtue, PhD, degree in counseling psychology, a spiritual doctor of psychology, and a fourth-generation metaphysician who works with the angelic and other elemental and ascended master realms. Doreen has appeared all over the place, CNN, Oprah's program, Good Morning America. She's a regular guest here on Coast to Coast as well. She's got her own live weekly radio show visiting HayHouseRadio.com. Here she is back on Coast to Coast with Saved by an Angel. Hey, Doreen, how are you?
George, my friend, how are you? It's so good to be with you.
Me likewise. I'm looking forward to this. This is a subject that so many people, whether they're up, down, depressed, you name it, they love talking about angels. And I'm going to tell you, when we open up the phone lines later, we will get stories that are going to get you to write another book.
Mm.
They're everywhere. And they come in like crazy. Without getting biblical here, Doreen, I want you to tell me your opinion of what angels are. What's this angelic realm all about?
Well, this is speaking as a lifelong clairvoyant. Many children see angels, and I was no exception. And I was fortunate to be raised by parents who helped me to keep my spiritual gifts alive, so I still see them. So as a lifelong clairvoyant and someone who studied all the different scriptures of all religions about spiritual guides and angels, what I'm convinced angels are is part of our physiological makeup. They are around our body, but every single person has these guardians with them in the same way that every single person has lungs and a heart and a brain. It's something that seems to be issued to all of us for our life force here on Earth. And these are not our friends or family who've passed on, although they can act like angels. These are egoless beings who are so pure and whose will is aligned with the highest purpose of all, which is peace.
Exactly. And, of course, when this universe was created, you contend that they came before the physical, I believe, right?
Yes. Well, the angels have always been here watching over the planet. They absolutely love all of the inhabitants, each one of us. And they are here to make sure our planet goes on, that everyone can get to the ultimate goal, which is peace on Earth, which I personally believe is possible. And each angel is trying to help the individuals that they're working with to be at peace, because they say one person at a time being at peace creates, voila, a world of peaceful people.
Now we'll get into Genesis, because I have to. These fallen angels. Now, to me, if angels are all good, how in the heck could we have fallen angels? How could we have this evil associated with them?
Well, it is a misnomer. And the term angel, meaning messenger of God, signifies that they are pure and can't change. But there are beings who are called fallen angels that are things such as earthbound humans who've not gone to the light and who are sticking around and causing havoc. There are definite lower energies out there that you call evil and very, very dark and demonic. Fortunately, they do not have as much power as the angels do, and it's one reason why you want to work with your angels and have them as your allies, even closer than they normally would be.
Now, wasn't Lucifer, though, one of those big fallen angels?
That's an urban legend, actually. The whole fallen angel, as written in the Bible, talks about this being called Samael. There's beings of light who went into the darkness, but they're not called Lucifer in the actual Bible. That story appears to have come from John Milton, who was in his day the Celestine Prophecy of its day. It was a novel called Paradise Lost. It's not part of the Holy Bible, The Holy Bible that I've read many, many times does talk a lot about angels in different forms, and, you know, there's a lot of warnings in there, but it never once says that Lucifer was a fallen angel.
Why do the depictions of angels, Doreen, always have wings?
Well, that's interesting, and I actually posed that question to the angels since I do talk to them. And what they told me was that the early Renaissance painters saw their glow, or were connected to the glow around them, what we call an aura. And the best that they could create that sense of it was brush strokes, which later became wing-like. And so when people do have angel visions, which more people have these visions than you'd think, it's pretty common, the angels always appear with wings, but they do not use the wings like birds for transportation. They're a way of us recognizing them.
Do these angels walk among us now?
Oh, yes. And actually, in my new book, Saved by an Angel, one of my favorite chapters is the section about help from mysterious strangers. And one of the reasons I love this is because this is happening more and more. As I travel around the world giving workshops, I'm always talking to people about their angels. And increasingly, just in the last 5 years, I'd say, more people are reporting that they're having these mysterious strangers show up from out of nowhere and either do a life-saving intervention and then disappear without a trace, or deliver a message that person needed to hear that implies that the stranger knew a lot about them and, again, is untraceable. And a lot of these stories, George, are so remarkable because angels are showing up with emergency vehicles, or they're able to lift cars out of snow, yeah, or off of a person. And then sometimes these angels are giving out business cards even. I mean, they're real people.
What do they say?
They say
the
usually
cards.
Mike or Michael, and they've got an address and a phone number. And when the person who received the card tries to thank their rescuer later, there's no such person at that address, or there's no address.
Or the phone number doesn't work, probably.
Exactly. So the angels aren't shy. They're making their identity is known. They're not trying to be so like a superhero, you know, hiding their identity. They want us to know they're here. And they're being more and more bold, I think, as we're nearing 2012 and so many are getting afraid, just to let us know we are watched over and protected.
And then wings, what do they do if they're walking among us? Do they kind of tuck them in, or
when
what
they,
happens?
When they appear to us, they almost appear like normal people. I say almost because every story I've received of one of these mysterious strangers shows that the person's always dressed oddly. Either they're dressed like a homeless person, or they're dressed too dressed up for the situation. They never blend in. And almost always they say that the angel person has very exotic, unusual eyes. Very often they're blue or glow. There's just something really different about this person, and they have a calming effect when you meet them.
Interesting. Now, these angels, some people, I'm convinced, have confused angels with ETs, or ETs with angels, right?
I agree. Well, I think in some ways there's so many different, I don't know if you want to say breeds or races of beings from other galaxies, as ETs, if you will, because they're not from our terrestrial area. And I believe some of them are acting like angels on this planet, and because they have a vested interest in Earth staying intact and helping all of us and watching over what they call the Garden of Earth. And so I do believe that some of the angel experiences probably are ETs. I also believe some of them, I'm getting reports, are from really helpful, regular humans who, when they fall asleep, they put an intention out there that they'd like to go help others while they're sleeping. And so their souls travel, and then people in a different time zone who are awake connect to them like they're angels. But it's really
I believe
souls.
That. I believe that. When a loved one dies, a lot of people will say, I saw my grandmother at the foot of my bed, or she helped me in a very tragic circumstance, or my grandfather did. It seems to me, Doreen, that departed loved ones seem to come back. Are they angelic? Are they ghostly? What are they?
Well, definitely I've had that experience with my own grandfather when he was tragically killed by a drunk driver, and I saw him also at the foot of the bed, and I've felt the presence of my grandparents. It's just a different vibration from the angels. It's like having a really, really loving person help you, but that person still has a human ego. Their advice still is fallible, so I wouldn't go asking my grandmother what my life purpose is when I can so easily go up higher. But if I want to ask my grandma, how do I make the best oatmeal cookies in the entire universe? And you know, I would ask her. I would call on her and ask her. And I know I'm not bothering her because they love us and want to help us. And I also know this from doing readings over all these years, is that every person not only has guardian angels of the celestial type, but they also have at least one departed loved one with them, watching over them. And the departed loved ones appear to be fulfilling their life purpose vicariously through their living loved ones.
Does everybody have a separate guardian angel? Let's say 6.8 billion people on this planet. Are there 6.8 billion guardian angels, or a handful of them that are doing
more like
triple duty?
It'd be something like more like 13.2 million. Or even more than that, because every person I've ever seen has at least two angels. And these days, with more and more people believing in angels, the number increases. Because when you believe in angels, it attracts more angels to you. And fortunately, they're completely unlimited. There's no end in sight of how many angels are available to us. And it's very smart to call in more angels. They form kind of like a castle moat around you of protection. And just help your life to be more smooth and harmonious. So you don't have to believe even in angels to call on them, because once you call on them, you'll start to have these experiences that you can't explain otherwise that are very positive.
Where do they reside generally, Doreen?
They reside right next to us. It's very much like on your television set, how you have ABC, you have CBS, you have NBC, and they're all right next to each other, but different vibrations, so they don't bleed over into each other. So the angels are right next to your head and your shoulders and right there, real close to you all day long, every single day. But they vibrate just at a higher rate because they're never afraid. They're always at peace. And that's what they're trying to help us to do.
Do they eat? Do they sleep?
Apparently, they don't have a physical body, and they don't need any kind of sustenance. And even if they make a temporary human experience, I haven't heard any reports of them eating or drinking. So they, you know, this is the nice thing when you don't have a human body. Gosh, think of how much more time you'd have. You wouldn't have to worry about eating or drinking or calories or anything.
But they can manifest themselves into a physical body.
Absolutely, and they can be very strong people. Every week I write for a magazine called Woman's World, and so I get a lot of, and I have a true angel experience column in this very mainstream magazine. It's amazing. And then I've collected a lot of these stories for the Saved by an Angel book. So my point is, I've read just thousands and thousands of these stories, and I can tell the sincerity of the stories, and also met with people who've had angel experiences. And what I found is that when angels take on a human form and show up temporarily, it's always because there's some sort of urgent need. Either that person's really depressed, or they're very afraid. Maybe they went to the doctor that day and are waiting for the test results. And so some stranger will come up and say, you know what, everything's going to be okay, Mary, and doesn't know their name, but that's their name. I remember one story of a woman who was in the ocean, and there was some sort of tides that caused her to feel like she was drowning, and all of a sudden she felt these pair of hands just grab her lovingly and push her to the surface and help her to get out of the ocean. And she never saw the person, but she definitely felt the sense of someone helping her. And that kind of experience, I receive those stories almost every day now.
Do the angels, when they manifest themselves into a human form, is it possession of somebody and they're in their body, or have they created this body out of nowhere?
That's what it appears, that they absolutely created the body from scratch, or the experience of body. And so a lot of times when there's an angel that shows up in human form, a whole group of people will see the angel. That's really common. And then the angel will enact some sort of physical experience, like lifting a car out of the snow, or delivering a message, or just helping the person in some way. There's a story in Saved by an Angel of a woman who, before the age of cell phones, she had her car had just conked out, and it was the middle of the night, and it was in a bad neighborhood, and the security guard just showed up out of nowhere, and he offered to call an ambulance or a tow truck for her. Mm-hmm. And then before she could say thank you, he just vanished before her eyes. And that kind of experience is what we're hearing more and more, where the person will be out in the middle of the snow and two people will show up with a jack to lift the car out of the snow, or they'll physically pull it out and there's no footprints at all. There's another story in Saved by an Angel of a woman who was about to commit suicide, and she went out to a cliff, and she was going to throw herself over the edge of the cliff, and she was just completely so depressed and so distraught, she wanted to end it all. And she felt a tap on her shoulder and turned around, and it was this man with very unusual eyes, because that's what these angels show up and look like. And he sat and just listened to her talk for 2 hours, and at the end of the 2 hours, she was composed enough where she realized she didn't want to commit suicide. And then he was gone. And she went to look, because there was sand all over the place, for his footprints. And there was only her footprints.
Ha, footprints in the sand.
Exactly.
These people who die and they become ghostly apparitions. Mm-hmm. That's different from an angel, right?
Oh, yes, yes. And so, like in the case of grandparents, like you mentioned, our beloved relatives and friends who show up just to let us know that we're okay, they're okay, and that they want us to move on with our lives. Those kind of apparitions have happened to a lot of people. And Dr. Ian Stevenson, of course, studied that in length of the University of Virginia. And he found that people who've had those apparition experiences, usually a one-time experience where you have your eyes open, you see this bluish-white light, and you see this figure that's holographic. It always reminds me of the ghosts you see at the Haunted Mansion ride at Disneyland and Disney World, because it's that 3D appearance to it. And then they talk to you without words. It's wordless words. And they always say things like, I'm okay, don't worry about me, I love you, I'm watching over you. And then they're gone. And that's the true apparition experience. Most people, when they connect with their deceased loved ones more often, it'll be through their dreams. And the dreams, when the loved ones come to you, Dr. Ian Stevenson found that they are very lucid dreams with strong emotions and vivid colors, and you remember the dream years later as if it happened yesterday.
Why does it seem that the people just seem fascinated with angels? I mean, your books, of course, but there have been TV shows. You can't go into a novelty store, you know, or a 5 and 10 type. They don't even have 5 and 10 anymore. I'm aging myself.
Well,
you have little figurines of angels.
Yeah,
everywhere.
And people wearing pins, you know, the little angel pins. You see that all the time at the airports.
What's the fascination?
Well, it's really a form of comforting ourselves. And, you know, when we feel anxiety, just thinking about angels can help you to feel more safe, more secure, and much calmer. And I think that, you know, we all agree that there's just more stress right now than ever. People are working two jobs to make ends meet, or if they've got one job, they're usually doing the work of three people because of layoffs, and people are financially insecure. And then every other day, there's talk of the end of the world and, you know, financial stress.
So people want hope. And by the way, 5 and 10 should now be called $20 and $50 stores. I'll be back. It's chat time tomorrow. Those of you who are Coast Insiders, 8 p.m. Pacific time, 11 p.m. Eastern time, of course. It'll be a chat text. We'll do the video chat when I'm back in Los Angeles for the July chat. But tomorrow night will be a one-hour text chatting. You know how to do that if you're a Coast Insider, so make sure you're part of that. That list seems to grow and grow, but there's always room for more. And we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Doreen, we were talking about why people seem to be so fascinated with angels. I mean, you just can't go anywhere without seeing it. Is it also in all cultures on this planet, different places, different countries, they're all involved in the angelic fascination?
Well, it certainly seems that way. I'm on my fourth time around the world this year. I'm going to 25 cities, and gosh, how many countries am I going to this year? I don't know. I've lost track.
Don't ask me.
Yeah, so I'm touring continuously, talking with people all around the planet, and everywhere I go, everyone just loves the angels and wants to share with other people who love the angels at these events that we do. And in Eastern cultures, where it's not monotheistic, you know, more polytheistic or pantheistic, mm-hmm. they have angel-like deities. You know, if you think of Hinduism and they have Lakshmi and Sarasvati, these and such, they're like angels, like archangels probably more. But what I'm finding is that at my events, people of all different religions or non-religions, spiritual paths, different cultures, they all show up together, and it's something they can all agree on, which to me just is good news.
Yeah, it does. It skews beyond just religion, doesn't it?
It bridges religious divides, which is my great hope that everyone figures out that we're all praying to the same being eventually.
Before it's too late.
Yeah. And then the angels are non-denominational, so they don't require you to pass tests or to, you know, pray in a certain way, because they're part of life. They're with everyone. Even so-called evil people have guardian angels. Obviously, they don't listen to their angels or they wouldn't be evil. But it's just something that is this great non-physical part of everyone's lives. So it's something that I find that everyone can relate to the archetype of angels, even if they don't technically believe in them. But with more and more people having angel experiences these days, that's what's causing more people to not only believe, but to know that angels are real.
Can an angel that is following, let's say, a mass murderer, that they unfortunately have been assigned to, can they step in and do something to that person, either hurt them or, you know, make them fall off a cliff or something like that?
Yeah. You know? Probably it's tempting to the angel, but the angel being 100% love and respecting that person's free will, their wings are kind of tied. And that's why we do have the presence of evil on this planet, because each person has their free will choice to be miserable or create misery. And the angels, what they can do is they can warn, they can send out warnings to potential victims, you know, and hopefully that victim is listening to their intuition that day. They can try and get the mass murderer to maybe stop doing whatever's making them so insane, such as taking lots of drugs or, you know, get into some sort of counseling or therapy. But the angels can't force anyone to either, you know, be happy or to be good or to be kind. All they can do is just be there on hold.
Don't you think, though, with that thought, and you're probably right, that there's a flaw in the angel model somewhere, that they can't get that kind of involved to stop something like that? I mean, I would agree they'd probably try to tip off someone. You know, don't walk down that alley. There's somebody down there, something like that. Even if they're the guardian angel of that perpetrator, let's say.
But, right.
You know, I really would think that they would have the kind of power to have a brick fall from the ceiling and fall on them or something like that.
Well, they definitely do have that kind of power. It's just that they are bound by the law of free will, as is our own creator. This whole world was created with the knowledge that we have free will. And so nobody can intervene into our free will without our permission. And that's why we have all the human drama that we have. It would be so nice if the angels could conveniently arrange that, you know, everyone plays nice together. You know, maybe the game would be over then. I don't know.
Well, this is a world, of course, of evidence, and people will come up to you. I'm sure they have, Doreen, wherever you've been, and they said, prove it. Prove that these angels are real. You say you talk to them. How do we know? So how do we prove? What's the evidence out there? Other than faith, that so many of us have, that these angels are real?
Well, first of all, I have high respect for skeptics. I don't think that we should believe in anything out of hand without testing it like a good scientist. So what would a scientist do if I presented the hypothesis that angels are real? They wouldn't reject the hypothesis without testing it. They would first put it to the test. So there's a few different ways to do this. One is to know that the angels want to help you with every single thing. Yes, even the so-called little trivial things, if that helps to bring you peace. So that includes things like finding a great parking place, like getting to work on time, like getting a taxi cab on a Friday night that's rainy.
If you live in New York.
When you live in New York, exactly. Yeah. So they want to help us with the so-called little things, and they hear our thoughts. This is real key. You don't have to worry about what words you use, but you do have to ask for help before they are allowed to intervene because of what we were talking about, the free will. So ask the angels to help you with something. Make it a very loose request. Don't hand them a script because the angels' parameters are actually more creative than our own imagination would think up. So just ask for help. You know, please give me a taxi cab. Please help me to find a great new home.
Well, how do we know that's not God doing all that for us?
Well, it is. It's all the same. I mean, the angels are messengers of God. If you think of it, they're the mailmen or male women delivering messages back
and forth. Well, let's hope they don't go postal on us.
Right. Our Creator vibrates at 100% love. And so when we're at peace, we can easily hear and feel the presence of our Creator. No problem. Like if you're alone in your room meditating, you can get that sense that you're one with everyone, your heart's open, you feel all the love. But when ordinary day where you're at work and there's people who are annoying and there's stress and competition and pressure, you just can't feel God as easily because your vibrations are so low. So the angels are the bridge that can go into our lower vibrations. We can feel them and hear them when we're stressed, when we need them the most, and then they can lift us back up to God.
What other physical signs are out there that would convince you that they're out there?
Oh, nonstop. There's a great story in Saved by an Angel. This is so common, George, where this woman named Allison was driving, and she was on a windy country road, and she was kind of slipping and sliding. Her car went too far to the right, and she kind of fell over to the side of the road with her car, and it looked like she might actually fall over the hill. And she heard this voice. This is what's really common, is hearing a voice. And the voice said to her very loud, "Pull over and stop." She was all alone in the car. There was no one who could have said that. But then she felt the steering wheel being turned to the right. I mean, that's this kind of story I hear constantly where people hear a voice in the car, and then they feel a pair of hands they can't see, and they can see the steering wheel turning on its own like a player piano playing on its own. And the steering wheel is steered so that they're out of danger and back to safety. I mean, this kind of thing happens all the time, but many people are afraid to admit it because of fear of seeming crazy or like a zealot. But these are ordinary people who, you know, don't have any religious drum to beat. They just are trying to get to work or trying to get to their mom's house and get into a jam, a danger on the freeway, and boom, angels come and help them. And a lot of times people will say, well, what about their free will? Well, what it appears to be is that there's one little loophole to the free will clause, that if it's not your time to go and you're in mortal danger, that the angels can intervene without your permission. The rest of the time when people are telling me angel stories, they did ask for help in some way, shape, or form. They might have said, "Oh God," or "Please help me," or maybe cried out to some angel, like Archangel Michael is a very common and good one to call in danger. Maybe they said, you know, whoever they're aligned with spiritually, Jesus or something. And that's a form of prayer that's enough to allow them to intervene. And you know what, George, when I read and hear these stories, I'm so impressed that in that crisis situation, instead of cussing like you'd be tempted to do, they instead asked for help. And I would hope that if I was in a situation like that, that I'd have that same wherewithal.
You remember the movie It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart?
Of course.
One of the classic angel movies of all times. I mean, I'll remember as a little boy, my mother said, sit down, Georgie, and let's watch this movie together. And I'll never forget that movie. I watch it every Christmas. It's just like a little tradition for me. But here's a case where George Bailey wanted to commit suicide. He was so despondent, and he's ready to jump into this icy river, and he sees this angel drowning. Now, he doesn't know it's an angel at the time. Mm-hmm. He sees this little old man drowning, so he jumps and he saves the guy. Bottom line is that I guess angels will also create episodes to help you, like Clarence did.
Clarence, and of course, what happens when you hear a bell ring? It means the angels got their wings.
They get their wings.
So yeah, the angels can. That's why when we ask for the angels' help, it's important that we don't outline how we want that help to come, because they're so clever and do things that will, in you know, the case of It's a Wonderful Life, create a diversion, or just come up with some ingenious way to help save the day.
What is your very favorite angel story of all time?
Probably some that happened to myself.
Really?
Well, I mean, all of this started, I was a regular therapist. I mean, regular, you know, somewhat spiritual, but I didn't bring that into my practice.
You weren't into the angels at that time.
I was into the angels, but it's something I kept completely private.
Okay.
Just for my family and friends. I didn't share it as a therapist. It's kind of something you separate out. And it was July 15th, 1995, and I was ready to go to church. And I was driving this car that was a convertible, but at the time, the electric motor of the top was broken, so it was permanently fused down, so the top was always down. And as I was getting ready to get in the car, I heard a voice, very male voice outside my right ear, as clear as I can hear your voice, George, and it said to me, you better put the top up on your car, Doreen, or it will be stolen. And the angels, what I've learned is they are very to the point, they're very blunt, they don't mince words, and I kind of started to argue with the voice, even though it seems insane now, looking back. I argued with it, but my top's broken, I can't get it up. And it just said, you better put the top up on your car, it will be stolen. And it said it three times, and I just couldn't put the top up. So I prayed for protection and safety as I was driving to church, and I knew intuitively what the voice meant, because it was a white car with white upholstery, and the church wasn't in the best neighborhood, and it was a little too flashy to take in that area, I think.
Right.
If the top had been up, it was the ugliest top you'd ever seen in your life, this black oxidized cloth thing. The top up, you wouldn't look twice at the car. So I asked for protection. As I pulled in the parking lot of church, these male voices were behind me, but it wasn't an angel this time, because it was these men who were cussing at me. And I turned around, and there was this real angry-looking man in front of me, another one right behind him next to a car, like a getaway car with the engine going.
Yeah.
And he demanded my car keys and my purse, or my life, and I was in a carjacking. And the voice of the angel was just right there at my ear, George. It said to me, scream with all your might. And I want to tell you that I found this strength of screaming deep inside me like a cave woman. And the man kind of started to back away, but he was still trying to grab for my purse and my car keys. And this was all happening in the space of 10 or 15 seconds. And this woman in the parking lot who just happened to be there, I know that God created all that help, she saw what was happening. She leaned on her car horn, and her horns attracted the attention of the people in the church who came out. And there's so many people that the men drove away. And so my life was saved, because this angel knew what my future would be an hour before it happened. And then once it happened, even though I kind of had ignored the angel's help, because I couldn't put the top up, the angel told me exactly what to do, and it changed my life. The very next day, I completely committed myself to teaching other people that angels are real.
That's a great story. That is a great story, and what a circumstance you could have been in had you not been aware of what was happening.
Well, that's just it. People sometimes say, well, where were the angels? But I knew in that situation that I had to cooperate with the angels and listen to them. If I'd put the top up on the car, it wouldn't have happened, but, you know, it happened. So that was the first thing that they gave me, where my free will choice was not to try and drag that top up. Second thing, they told me to scream with all my might. If I had not listened to that voice, I might not be here today.
What is their mission? I mean, they're here for a purpose. Is their purpose to help us, and that's it? What's their goal here?
It's kind of interactive and different layers. Every person has an important life purpose, kind of like players in an orchestra. Every person is equally needed and equally important. And so the angels are here to help you believe in yourself and do your purpose. So yours, obviously, is to have this radio show. And still, it takes human effort for you to do this. So the angels are helping you to do this, to have the confidence to do it, to be organized in your time and your schedule, to stay healthy, etc., so that you can conduct your purpose. Same with me with writing angel books.
And everybody has that.
Everybody's got an equally important purpose, whether it's changing tires, driving an airplane or a bus, teaching our children at school, etc. I mean, everybody's needed.
Is it a moment of tremendous strife that someone sees the angel? Maybe does it even know who it is or what it is? Or is it pretty common?
It's actually more common than we think. There's different forms. The most common way people see angels are sparkling lights or flashing lights that have no physical origin. It'll look like a flash of a camera's gone off, or like a 4th of July sparkler. And they're usually white. That's the guardian angels. And as near as I can tell, it's the friction of the angels moving across time and space, much like when a car is real lowrider on a highway and creates kind of sparks. And so people, probably everywhere I go, about half the audience tells me they've seen those sparks of light and flashes of light. And that's a form of clairvoyance, or seeing the angels. In my book, Saved by an Angel, I have a whole section on how to see angels, because I have found that anyone can see angels. A lot of it has to do with just removing your fear of seeing angels. As much as we want to see the angels, I think some Hollywood movies have made us afraid of that.
If you could see angels, would they be all over the place? I mean, hundreds and hundreds of them, like in one room?
They tend to cluster around people. So yes, there's hundreds of them if there's hundreds of people. When I go to the grocery store, or I'm on an airplane or an airport, there's a lot of angels. And they're real close to each person's shoulders and behind their head. If that person's going through a crisis, like such with their health, or they're going through a nasty divorce or something, there'll be more angels to help and attend to that person.
Well, as long as they keep that plane flying, that's all that really matters.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, actually, one of the secrets of working with angels on airplanes is, if you ever hear there's going to be nasty turbulence, ask the angels to smooth the flight, and it works every time.
Interesting. I should have tried that this weekend. I'll be back in a moment. Doreen Virtue, our guest, her book, Saved by an Angel.